UK Wine Show, show number 287. Thibaut Mongelard on making wine barrels. Bonjour, my name's Chris Scott, and a warm welcome to you from myself and the UK Wine Show, the first and greatest UK wine podcast. This week we're back in the seat, so to speak, more aptly on the oak plank, and we're going to be finding out about how wine oak barrels are made. We also are going to review the new Wine and Spirit Trade Association's Android Diary app, as well as some unusual facts and figures. I only just realised last week as I put the show up that some of you guys haven't been getting the last couple of episodes. Very sorry about that. It appears that one of those funny ampersandy type words in Blaufränkisch meant that iTunes couldn't process the RSS feed. All the other feeds were working fine, but iTunes couldn't quite deal with that. So hopefully you should have got it. In fact, you should have got a few shows backlogged as well. Jay and I have been slowly cranking things up. There's quite a few things to do at the beginning of the year in terms of planning and closing out last year's accounts and all that sort of stuff. But this year's looking like an exciting year from a business point of view with some great initiatives. So that's all looking good. That said, don't forget, we do make our money from running wine tastings, not from running the podcast. So if you do want to support the podcast, do consider about running a wine tasting, either for yourselves and your mates. We do a lot of birthday parties and all sorts of celebrations. Great events. But also if you work for a company and you're looking for a great idea to do an activity, something fun, bit of learning, bit of fun, all that sort of stuff, we can tailor it to what you require. And if neither of those work, don't forget we do one-day wine courses, and we got a fantastic one now focusing more on wine and food tasting, perfect for listeners of the show. Courses for the one-day wine course start at from £80, and we also offer a weekend break, all inclusive, two nights accommodation, including meals and one day wine course for £130. Great value. So do go to our website, 3050.co.uk, and have a look at that. A bit of an ad there, I know, but we've got to have a few of them occasionally. I did read an interesting fact on Twitter, though, this week, and I must admit I'm more of a lurker than a broadcaster on Twitter, but I follow a couple of hashtags, and one of the hashtags I follow is hashtag wine fact. And I read an interesting fact there, which the longest recorded champagne cork flight was 177 feet, 9 inches at Woodbury Vineyards, New York State. That is a long way for a champagne cork to fly. Before we crack on with the show, I have one more request. A listener emailed me a wee while ago asking about any high-class Parisian wine shops that would have been a very desirable place to go in the 1930s. Now, I don't know how old they think I am, but I certainly wasn't living in the UK in the 1930s, and I wasn't even born around then. But this guy needs it for a book that he's writing, and he needs some sort of background information about some high-class Parisian wine shop. If you know anything about that, do email me. It's chris.scott@3050.co.uk, and I can forward it on to John the wine writer. Or you can Twitter me at Winescriber. So one of those two, if you do know of any high-class wine shops from the 1930s in Paris. But I think that's about it. Let's crack on with the show. And we're going to start off, as usual, with our mystery wine producer. As usual, I'm going to give you a clue now. I'm going to give you a clue before the interview and then the answer at the end of the show. Our mystery wine producer is a family-owned wine producer in the southeast corner of South Australia's Coonawarra region. They're quite a famous wine producer from there. The business was launched in 1983 by Ian and Wendy, and today Ian oversees the 50,000 case production winery and vineyards, and Wendy is the cellar door manager. The winery has three core vineyards, a 12-hectare Nielsen's block planted by Ian and Wendy in 1975, the Wilger with its 45-hectare block, which was purchased in 87, and features an Italian block where varietals such as Sangiovese, Barbera, and Nebbiolo have been trialled for the suitability in Coonawarra. The third region, the Red Ridge Vineyard in Rattenbury, some 50 kilometres north, this is similar soils to Coonawarra with its shallow terra rossa over limestone, but the climate is marginally warmer, meaning that grapes ripen on average 2 weeks earlier. Ian was convinced that the climate would be ideal for Shiraz, and as a result has planted hectares of this variety in 1998. He has proved right when in 2006, his Rattenbully Shiraz won the International Judges Trophy at the 2009 Limestone Coast Wine Show. Not too many clues yet. I'll give you a big fat one later on, but they are a fairly famous producer from Coonawarra. And I'll give you the other clue after the news, which is coming up next with Jane.
Thanks, Chris. Researchers at the School of Biological Sciences at the University of Auckland have detected distinct differences between indigenous yeast strains in different regions. It's widely accepted that the interaction of climatic, geographic, and soil conditions with different grape varieties serves to make regionally distinctive wines, but that for the first time, these findings suggest that yeasts could be part of that regional influence and of the wine's terroir too. The study investigated yeasts present in Chardonnay and Syrah grapes and their spontaneous ferments in three distinct wine regions in New Zealand. At present, the research is confined to New Zealand, but it's suspected that the same story will be true in other parts of the world. The researchers said the next steps were to discover what was driving the differences and to identify yeasts responsible for specific aromas and flavours that could contribute to a regional signature. They also want to discover when New Zealand's genetically distinct yeast population arrived in the country.
While most of us think of yeast splitting in asexual reproduction, that is, it produces an identical copy of itself, which is the common process in fermentation, but they can produce spores that undergo sexual reproduction. So it's not surprising that local regions have their own populations of yeast that develop quite quickly. It only takes the introduction of a couple of species of yeasts in the winery before an indigenous population may develop or influence the local population of yeasts. Just to give you something a wee bit different, but talking about yeast, it's a bit like lager yeast, which until recently had been tracked down to come from South America. Before they most likely stowed away on ships, no bottom fermenting yeasts existed in Europe. But shortly after the ship started travelling to South America, the first lagers were produced in Germany using this new yeast. They had obviously arrived and set up a colony, perhaps adapting to the local environment. What's the next story, Jane?
Well, sadly, it's unlikely that ice wine will be produced this year, with temperatures in the Mosel rarely dropping below 8 degrees Celsius, over 25 degrees warmer than this time last year. And the minimum temperature required for ice wine production is minus 7 degrees. Luckily, there was a good ice wine yield last year, which led many producers this year to hang on as long as they could. But this year, the chances of harvesting grapes for ice wine are very low, as there is some advanced rot on the grapes, meaning that temperatures would now have to reach at least minus 10 degrees Celsius, so that they are totally frozen at harvest. Across the northern United States and Canada, the story is the same, with ice wine production down by at least 40%. In Niagara, the ice wine harvest is in danger not only due to the abnormally high temperatures, but also because of significant rainfall during autumn. Although most Niagara ice wine producers also make table wine, considerable rainfall forced growers to pick the thin-skinned Riesling grape early, leaving nothing for ice wine. Meanwhile, at prestigious producer Peller Estates Winery, they're optimistic, as for a single evening this month, temperatures fell to the required minus 10 degrees Celsius, enabling a large portion of their grapes to be picked.
Yep, the mild weather in UK is not isolated, and the fact that I've daffodils trying to grow in January tells us that this winter has been very mild, but sadly almost too late for ice wine in Europe. What's the last story, Jane?
Well, finally this week, Jacob's Creek is launching a range of lower alcohol wines under a new sub-brand, Cool Harvest, but will position the range as light and fresh rather than targeting the low alcohol sector. The wines will be between 9.5% and 10.5% ABV, whereas low alcohol wines are around 5.5%. The Cool Harvest range features a Vermentino, a Sauvignon Blanc and Shiraz Rosé, and the positioning is a result of research that showed consumers wanted lower alcohol, but they didn't want to compromise on flavour. The range will be available in the UK from February, retailing at £8.49 a bottle. That's it from me this week, but don't forget to visit our website at 3050.co.uk.
Cheers, Jane. I'm pleased Jacob Creek has joined the low alcohol brigade. I like the idea of low alcohol wines, don't get me wrong. But so far, I've not been too impressed with low alcohol wines, apart from one of my favourites, Moscato d'Asti. But what I want is a move to lighter wines, with some more options around the 9, 10 or even 11% alcohol, that you get to enjoy the alcohol, because there's nothing like a nice glass of wine, feel the warmth flood over you. But I'm not so impressed with these whopping 15%+ anymore. If you are looking for lighter and low alcohol wines, there's a slew of trade tastings coming up in London or running at the moment. I've got a big week next week tasting lots and lots of wines. But something that might help you with trade tastings, particularly if you are in the trade, is an Android app called Wine and Spirit Trade Association Trade Diary. And that's the spotlight this week. I had a bit of a play with the Wine and Spirit Trade Association Trade Diary, and it is a very simple Android app, which is, I think, a must for anyone involved in the wine trade who likes to go to trade tastings. The Trade Diary shows all the trade tastings going on in the UK on a particular day. Most of the tastings are free to the trade, but some are by invitation only, which basically means you normally have to write to a PR agency to get invited. It also has a list of seminars, exams, and awards. The displays are particularly simple in this app. When you start the app after the initial splash screen, it goes to a month view, very similar to many calendars. It just looked like a normal calendar. From here, you can move to another month or select a particular date. You can tell the days that have got activities on because we've got a blue dot on them. Below the calendar, you can scroll to see brief details about the event. And clicking on the brief description brings up the event in details, including times, location, and general information about getting an invitation. A neat feature for Google users is the Sync Event button that lets you add the event to your Google Calendar automatically. This saves time and effort, and it's certainly probably one of the key reasons I'm going to be using the app. But perhaps the coolest feature is a map showing all the events in the UK. It allows you to plan your trip if you want to go visit several, and you can zoom in and zoom out looking at, I'm here, the next trade tasting I want to go to is over there, sort of thing. There is a small bug in the map in that if you change the date, it does not reload the map until you sort of resize the map. But apart from that, it's a pretty useful feature. You can also submit events to the Wine Spirit Trade Association through the app, although I would still do this on a computer as my typing on a phone is slow and I couldn't find a spell checker, which, if anybody knows me, is an essential tool for me. While this is a review of the Android app, there is an iPhone app already being released, but there's no news or information about a Windows Phone 7 environment. The Wine and Spirit Trade Association Android app is a simple app, but it does what it says in the tin pretty well. The values and the dates that they have, and being able to easily add them to your phone's calendar is a bonus. In the end, I rated this app 88 out of 100, which is a pretty good rating for an app, especially one that just does very simple stuff. Okay, that finishes the spotlight on Wine Spirit Trade Association Android app. Next up, we've got the second clue in our mystery producer. And as I said, our mystery producer is a Coonawarra producer, and he produces two other icon wines, both of which are released in exceptional years. These are Ravenswood Cabernet Sauvignon and Nelson Bloch Merlot. Overall red varieties make up 80% of their vineyards. These also include Cabernet Franc, Pinot Noir, and Petit Verdot. Chardonnay, Riesling, Sauvignon Blanc, and Semillon make up the white grape varieties. As normal with a lot of Aussie producers, they have a restaurant complex, and the estate also features a historic cottage, the entrance to the winery, which Ian and Wendy restored in 1983. It dates back to the 1860s and was the birthplace of the poet John Shaw Nelson, as well as the original cellar door. As it's quite a hard one, I'm going to give you a big clue on the producer, and the name rhymes with the word bollock. If we think about that, I'll give the answer after our interview, which is coming up next with Tibor. Let's have a listen about how wine barrels are made.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Tibor Montelet. How are you, Tibor?
Good, thank you.
Excellent. You're a master cooper working for Merlu.
Merlu.
We're going to talk a wee bit about how we make barrels this time. Mm-hmm. We had a wee look around your workshop, and last week we talked about people going into the forest, choosing wood, cutting the tree down, and making out a rough plank almost, like a stave, but the wrong shape altogether. And the wood turns up at your cooperage here. What do you do when the wood turns up here?
Here we receive the stave for drying, because it's very important to dry, the wood. Mm-hmm. And here is the cooperage is near Nuit Saint-Georges, and the cooperage is on altitude, mm-hmm. and is very important for the wood, because there is more rain, more wind, and is very good for a good drying of a stave.
So it sounds a bit strange. You want lots of rain to dry the wood. Mm-hmm. That doesn't sound right to me.
It's very important for rinse the tannin, yep. of the wood. It's for respect after the barrels, more respect the fruit.
Okay, so you actually want to rinse the tannins out or wash them out almost.
Mm-hmm. And we dry the wood along 18 months to 36 months on the Merieux wood park.
Okay, so you have your own wood park, and that's just wood stacked on top of each other, isn't it?
The dry in Merieux wood park is very special because for 1 meter, there is just 4 barrels who dry. And we do a chimney stack for dry the wood.
Yeah, that's
for dry the stave.
Yeah, I remember as a kid, you'd get matchsticks and you'd build towers, two sticks, and then another two sticks the other way,
yes.
Two sticks that way, building big towers. Mm-hmm. And that's how they're stacked out there, isn't it?
We do that for a good dry, and is for the stave are very homogene, are very...
Even.
Even, yes. And it's very different to another cooperage, because there is just, for 1 meter, there is just 2 staves, or another, there is 7 or 8 staves for just 1 meter.
Mm. Yeah, okay. Why do people put more staves per layer when they're stacking them? You only do 2, but you said some people do many. Why is that?
For this special dry, we need more space and more time, because we do the chimneys with the head. When we receive the stave, you take stave by stave for made the chimney stack. Mm-hmm. And here we have more space, and you use this space, and is very good for made the barrels with this special dry.
And you said you age the wood, you let it mature for between 18 months and 3 years, 18 months to 36 months,
mm-hmm.
to let the tannins wash through. But the wood changes colour as well. Why? What does the difference in time do? And do people prefer wine that's been seasoned for longer, or barrels that have been seasoned for longer?
There is different dry. It's for the wine, for the customer or winemaker, because they like... a fresh wood, or they like a fresh wine for respect. If the customer do a small percentage of new oak for the cuvée, he need more tannin, and we prefer give a young wood, because mm-hmm. there is more tannin of dry of 18 months. And if do a long élevage, he need a fine, a discrete tannin, and we prefer deliver 24 months or 36 months.
Okay.
But the 36 months, there is usually a little dry for the wine, and the wine must a good fruit and a more power. Take the barrels for, take the wood.
You need a bigger wine.
Yes.
For more wood. Okay, so if you've got a wine that you only have a small amount of new oak in there, you want a short drying time because it has a bit more tannins and a bit more guts to the mm-hmm. wood. And if you have a lot of new oak, you don't want it to overpower the wood, so you have a longer drying period with less tannins. Does that mm-hmm. summarize it?
Yes, and is with the dry is very important. Do a good toast for the barrels. If you use 80 months dry, you must do a long toast with a slow fire, very slow, and for penetrate inside of the stave for cooking the tannin.
Oh, okay.
And after, if you have a good toast with this dry, the result is more discrete. The wood is very discrete, very very fine, and is very important for respect the fruit.
Mm-hmm.
But on opposite, if you want a fresh wood, you can use 80 month dry with a small toast. His name is Blonde.
Blonde toast, yeah.
Yes, and here there is fresh wood for the wine, because... The toast is no long, and we toast just the inside barrels.
Yep.
And
it's a short toast.
Yes.
Short and hot.
Yes.
Young seasoned barrels,
mm-hmm.
and long and slow, and low temperature for a more mature barrel,
yes.
with a deeper toast.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's talk about that. So you get your planks of wood or staves. The stave. You bring them into the workshop here. And mm-hmm. What's the first thing you do?
The first work is clean the stave. And mm-hmm. all the stave are more clean for because we don't need the old wood for made barrels. First work is for clean the wood. And after, we can build the barrels.
So do you sand the wood down to clean it, or do you cut it?
I cut the side.
Yep.
And after, we prepare two side, a good dimension for stave.
Yeah, because the barrels, the wooden staves are fatter in the middle and thinner at the edges, aren't they?
Yes. The side are the same, but the middle is different. There is 1 centimeter.
Okay, 1 centimeter.
Mm, usually. Mm.
And clean the wood, you trim it to the right shape, and then what do you do?
And after, we can build the barrels.
Mm-hmm.
You take 30 stave for made barrels. We rinse with hot water.
Oh, okay.
After we cook, we do the toast for the customer.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And we talked about blonde toast versus a darker toast.
Mm-hmm.
You said that the blonde toast is more for people who are going to have longer seasoned wood, where you're going to use more wood. I've got it around the wrong way.
If you use a blonde toast, the result is more fresh wood for the wine.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
If you use the house toast, there is more smoke, more toast for the wine.
Mm-hmm.
And another toast in Merieux Copperage is the toast à cœur, is a long toast with a small fire, is for respect the fruit.
Oh, okay. So the toasting does make quite a difference to the wine.
Yes. We have 3 types of barrels. His name is a tradition, grand selection, and premier cru.
Okay, and what does that mean?
And these tapes is for representing Merieux for different wine. And all the tapes is very specific because the tradition is a blend with forest of Compiègne, Fontainebleau, Nevers. And the grand selection is another forest, is Bercé, Bertranche, Troncé. And the premier cru is only Vosges.
Oh, okay.
And it's for different wine and different aromatic.
Yeah, yeah. Does the actual wood, apart from the seasoning of the wood, does the wood itself add flavor? Like people talk about vanilla being added to a wine from oak or smokiness. In America, sometimes the wood gives a coconutty flavor to the wine. Do the different forests make a big difference to the final taste of the wine?
Yes. The difference of the center, forest center and Vosges is the grain. In Vosges there is more fine grain, and in center is very extra fine grain.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you toast your barrels a wee bit, or a lot, depending on what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then what's the next step?
After the toast, we prepare the barrels for receive the head.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And is a machine. His name is Rogneuse. And we cut the wood for made a chime to receive the head.
Yeah, you put a wee groove in it, don't you? You sort of put a lip on the wood, and then you put a groove further down into the wood where the top of the wood fits into it.
Yes. And for the head is the same preparation. And we clean the piece of wood with a new machine, the four side is the name. And after we press the wood,
yeah,
and we cut the wood for made
the shape. Yep. And do you use any glue when you're making the barrels? Are they glued together?
No, there isn't a glue. There is the wood is just all the stave are pressure, and for the barrels is the pressure of the hoops who do glue.
Yeah, so the barrels are made up of wood, and then you've got the hoops holding everything together. And then when you put the head in, you said that you take the hoops off so you can get the sort of head into that groove that's cut. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, and then do you put the hoops back on?
Yes.
Okay. We had a look at some of the finished barrels. I think what's the final step after you've put the head on, the bottom on?
We must clean the out of the barrels, mm-hmm. because it's very important, because the wood is more expensive, and when we have built barrels, it's good that it's very clean.
Yeah, it looks nice, and it's all sanded down.
Yes.
Excellent. Okay. And then it's ready to ship. I noticed that some of the hoops that you put on were painted black, some were steel, and some of them almost had bits of oak branches around the outside. What's the story there?
We have different types of barrels. There is export barrels. There is only hoops, steel hoops. But we have the tradition, Burgundy tradition. There is black hoops. The shortness hoops is a protection of the barrels only.
That's the wooden hoops, the shortness hoops.
It's a tradition and just for the protection.
Okay. There's quite a number of different types of barrels. We'll just finish up by finding out about them. People, you mentioned when we were talking before that there's a Bordeaux barrel, which is 225 litres, and there's mm-hmm. a Burgundy barrel, which is 228, and there's 400-litre barrels and 300-litre barrels and all sorts of stuff. Why do people want different sized barrels?
For Bordeaux and Burgundy is a tradition. The size of barrels is tradition. In Bordeaux is 225 litres, mm-hmm. but the staves are more long, is 95 centimetres, and yep. in Burgundy is just 90.
Oh, okay, they're shorter barrels.
Yes. And we built another type of barrels, 400 liters. Mm-hmm. And you can use for the Chardonnay or in Australia, for example, they like 300 barrels.
Yep.
300 liters. And in Côte du Rhône, in France, we use more 500 liters.
Oh, that's
and 600 liters.
In Côte du Rhône, that's quite a big barrel, isn't it?
Yes.
I suppose there's more wine to barrel, so you don't get the same extraction. Is that to do with alcohol levels in the wine, perhaps? Or
yes, because the proportion of wine and inside barrels, inside wood, mm-hmm. In 500 liters, there is less wood to wine. 28 liters.
Okay, and as I suppose in Rhone Valley, the wines tend to be slightly higher in alcohol, and the higher alcohol is like a solvent, isn't it, for extracting tannins and flavour mm-hmm. from the barrel.
And there's the tradition too, because yep. Before the barrels is just for transport the wine, mm-hmm. and before is not for the aromatic wood, it's just for transport.
Yep.
And now we use the French wood for the aromatic, for the tannin,
yep.
Who is inside, and is an old old tradition.
And talking of traditions, a long time ago they used to use other types of wood, not just oak. Cherry and all sorts of different types of wood. Have you ever made barrels that were not from oak?
We can use the acacia or the
acacia.
Mm.
Yep.
And there is another wood is American oak. Mm-hmm. But the American oak is very different to French oak. There is more tannin. And there is more density, and we can cut the tree for made a stave. It's very different.
Because in France, you split the wood, don't you, down the grain?
Yes, well, more respect the grain, yep. along the grain. Or the American oak, you can cut yeah. a tree.
Mm. There's a chemical in oak called ligine or something like that. I can't remember the exact name. And American oak has got more of it, and that's like, it makes it more watertight, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So you can go across the grain.
Yes, French oak for one barrels is 47 kilo.
Yep.
And American oak is 50 kilo.
Oh, okay. So they're
the density of the wood is very different.
They're always bigger in America, aren't they? I think we'll wrap it up. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Hope you enjoyed that interview with Thibault. Making wine barrels, quite an involved process, and the seasoning. I hadn't quite appreciated all the ins and outs of seasoning and the fact that you actually need the weather to run through them to strip the tannins out. Let's finish up the show, though. First of all, we've got to give you the answer to our mystery wine producer, and it was Hollick. Sort of rhymes with bollock, if you remember. And he's a family wine producer in the southwest corner of Australia's Coonawarra region. The business was launched in 83 by Ian and Wendy Hollick. Overall red varieties make up about 80% of the vineyard, including Cabernet Franc, Pinot Noir, Petit Verdot, Chardonnay, Riesling, Sauvignon Blanc, and Semillon make up the white grape varieties. And to finish the show, we just have our quote, and I quite like this quote. I don't know the person. It's from W.E.P. French, and comes from the wine list of the Commander's Palace in New Orleans, seemingly. But I like it, and it goes, "Here's to the corkscrew, a useful key to unlock the storehouse of wit, the treasury of laughter, the front door of fellowship, and the gate of pleasant folly." Until next week, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Chris Scott and the news is read by Jane Scott. To listen to other shows, visit ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.